Oh man. Here we go again. My goodness gracious, golly me. I sincerely mean this the most when I say this, but happy Monday, everyone. It is Monday, November 9th, 2020. You are listening to the Bodega Body Podcast, and my name, of course, is Rich Sabata, your host, and of course, the creative director of Bodega Body. And man, I have got a great show for you today, as always, and I'll get into all that. But first of all, I wanted to say thank you so much for listening. Thank you for sharing this show. We've got a growing audience literally all over the world, and it is incredibly humbling to see that every single week. I'm incredibly humbled at the reception for the new BodegaBody.com that I've seen out there. And for those of you who are new, BodegaBody.com is the shopping destination for fitness and athleisure apparel with a mission and with a cause. 50% of all of our profits are donated to organizations whose mission it is to fight the issues that are barriers to health, fitness, nutrition, and overall wellness. Issues from climate change to social justice, easy for me to say, racial injustice, education, nutrition, and everything in between. I've loved the support I've gotten so far. I just put up a new design for a t-shirt called the Create Urban Farmers t-shirt. It's devoted to making sure that we build the next generation of urban farmers in cities like New York. 50% of the profits for that t-shirt are being donated to Harlem Grown, so go check that out at bodegabody.com. Now, I think I would be remiss if I do not mention, because I spent some time last week talking about the presidential election, to acknowledge partially why I'm in a good mood. I wanted to extend my public congratulations to President-elect Joe Biden, and most importantly, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, for their historic campaign and their historic victory. As someone who one day hopes to have kids, I look at Kamala and I think to myself, man, that is a great feeling when, you know, someone who comes from an immigrant family has made it to one of the highest offices in the country. And I know that Kamala likely has future ambitions and they have a lot of work to do. I didn't always agree with a lot of their record, but that's not the point at the moment. I think at the moment I wanted to celebrate the historicness of this, and now is when the real work starts for those folks. And now is when, you know, you put your money where your mouth is and, you know, make sure that we can hold them accountable as well. But enough about that. Enough about politics. Today, I'm talking to Jesse Sherliff. And in my conversation today with Jesse, we really dive deep into Jesse's story and how she became the host of the This Is My Truth podcast. And we talk about opening up for the very first time and how we can have more conversations and show more vulnerability. And I think for a lot of not only just women out there, but anyone who's looking to learn to express themselves, learn to get things off of their chest, especially as we've all known that this past year has been a bit crazy and a bit nuts, that vulnerability and talking with those around us are incredibly important. And being able to find truth in your situation and acknowledging your situation and being able to sort of carry on every day is also very important. So, enough with the intro. I've blabbed for long enough. This is my conversation with Jesse Sherliff. I think it's become obvious at this point, many, many episodes into the podcast, that my favorite topic is probably mental health and talking about stories of perseverance and human motivation and finding out what's that secret sort of sauce that helps people push through the major sort of barriers that we deal with in life, especially in this moment that we are living in. And I am extremely excited to have my guest on today. I actually appeared on her podcast many, many weeks ago. But she is the founder and host of the This Is My Truth podcast and community. Please welcome Jesse Sherliff. Welcome.
Hi, Rich. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
I am really excited to have you. I don't know if I told you this last time that we spoke. I don't know if I did or not. But one of the things I love, what about your show, but also about you, is that you have this very like calming voice. And it's very like soothing on the soul. And that I think in podcasting is underrated because, you know, I'm a loudmouth New Yorker. So I tend to be very boisterous and I tend to be very loud. And that's not always soothing to people. So I love that about you and your show.
I love that. Which is funny because I'm also a New Yorker. But now I live in the Midwest, and so maybe the Midwest has rubbed off of me.
Yeah, and you're Italian too, right?
Yes, yeah. Maybe just all of the noise in my life has then created this like zen-like need.
Yeah, that's fair. I want to get into the podcast and everything, but I think the first thing that I've been asking all of my guests right now is, you know, how the heck are you in this sort of crazy moment that we are all in? I think there is one universal truth right now, is that we're all kind of dealing with this in some sort of way, and between, you know, COVID, between social justice issues, political stuff. How have you been?
Yeah, I love this question. It's so simple, but honestly, when you get into it, it could go so deep. You know, I'm right now in this moment, I'm hopeful. And that comes with, you know, a lot of ups and downs. Yeah. And, you know, I recently told my therapist this week that I've realized about myself that my zone used to be that I wouldn't feel any emotions, right? Yeah. So I would just sort of like walk through life, one foot in front of the other. Obviously that's not healthy and or good, right? But I also have not been able to do well with like constant spikes of anxiety and stress. And so I've been working on how do I anticipate things that are going to cause me anxiety or cause me stress, things like the upcoming election or, you know, right now I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old or 2.5-year-old now. And, we made the decision to send my oldest to a homeschooling pod versus sending her back to school. And we did that for a variety of reasons, but what I did not anticipate is sort of the drama that comes with 5 families coming together and making decisions that impact all of us. Like we're all making sacrifices. And so for me, how I've been dealing with all of this is thinking about, okay, like what can I control?
Yeah.
And what can I recognize is not necessarily in my control? And how do I become okay with that?
Yeah, there's so much amazing things there. I think what's particularly great, one, is shout out to the parents out there. Because, look, I was telling you right before we hit the record button, I'm a puppy dad now, and I literally say that's my child, but that's not the same as a human baby.
I meant to tell you this when we were talking about the dog, but I actually think a puppy is sometimes harder than a child in some ways. And then obviously children are harder than puppies in other ways, but yeah. Like you're in the thick of it.
I am in the thick of it. But I have to say that like figuring out the schooling thing has got to be probably one of the most difficult things right now, because I think it's hard because we know that the education experience hasn't been the same for kids. But we also want to keep our kids healthy and safe, and we want to keep ourselves healthy and safe. And there's a lot of things to balance and weigh there, especially when we're thinking about the kids long term and the things that they're going to remember when they're 21, 22, 23 about this time period and how we handled those things. So kudos to you for that. You also mentioned that you were talking to your therapist about sort of managing your sort of feelings and trying to anticipate the things that are going to be sort of triggering. And I think that is also incredibly important, because I think about pretty early on in the sort of COVID craziness, how I think we were all very much attached to our laptops, our phones. And I think that it was really hard to turn away from the news cycle and whatever any politician was saying about how to handle this thing. And, you know, no matter where you lie on the political spectrum, this has been weird and tough. And it's hard to not feel this sort of sense of we're all kind of collectively going a little nuts right now.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite way to sort of describe what we're going through right now is we're all in the same storm, but all of our lifeboats are vastly different. Mm. And I think that's so important because, you know, for me, we no longer have help, like childcare help, and we live not near family. Right. And so when we made this decision to be in this homeschooling pod, we like basically isolated ourselves. And I knew that, but I didn't necessarily know that. And at the same time, I'm still trying to work a full-time job. I'm still trying to have a podcast. And I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. And when I go into work, like people are like, well, they just assume like I have help and I have, you right. know, something. And so I think it's important. I love this saying because it's true. Like this on the outside, we're all in the same storm,
right?
But like each of us are dealing with our own, can I curse?
Yes. Yeah.
Our own shit. And like acknowledging that yeah. at the bare minimum of just saying like, hey, you know, how are you? How are yeah. you doing today? And just also acknowledging, like as a leader of a team, I take this for granted. But I was in a large meeting, and I said, you know, it's okay not to be okay, and I'm not okay right now. Right. And the amount of pings that I got after was like shocking to me.
Right.
But sometimes people just need that acknowledgement and need to know that they're seen and heard, which I believe is like all people really want.
Yeah. And that's great. I had a really similar moment. Actually right after the murder of George Floyd, my team had a meeting, because my boss, by the way, I'm like one of two people of color on a large team, at least in our New York office. And there was this moment where our leadership, who's white, looked and said, okay, we need to have this conversation, because it got to a point with all the protests and the news cycle that it was really hard to move throughout the day without having these conversations and without sort of acknowledging this moment, because it was really hard to focus on work and it was really hard to give a crap about whoever's marketing dollars when all this stuff is happening. And there was this moment where for the first time in a corporate setting, I was able to speak my truth about race and equity and equality and injustices and, you know, racial insensitivities that I had dealt with in a corporate environment. And I think that afterwards, the reception that I got was, you know, thank you for sharing that, because I would have never have known that about you. I don't know how you know, are able to deal with this so well, and how, you know, you have gone your whole life experiencing this. And I felt so heard for the first time, and I felt so seen for the first time in a corporate environment where typically myself as a person of color isn't necessarily always welcome. And I always say that those environments aren't necessarily sort of built for us. Yeah. And so I think I hear you in that there's this cathartic sort of feeling about talking about yourself and talking about the things that run sort of deep within you and actually being heard by someone, which actually leads me pretty great into your podcast, This Is My Truth podcast. And I want to know a little bit about how you got into wanting to hear everyone's sort of perspective and their truth and their hardships in life.
Yeah. So I believe that as humans, our superpowers, our ability to create connection and have empathy. But I think so often because of life and cultural pressures, we forget that.
Yeah.
And I forgot that. Mm. So I'll share a story. It was 6:03 in the morning and I was brushing my teeth with my electric toothbrush. I will never forget this. And my husband just happened to look at me and said, "Are you happy?" And for some reason that morning, he's asked me, "Are you happy?" like numerous times in our relationship. We've been together 12 years. I just blurted out the truth, which was no. And it scared the crap out of him and it scared the crap out of me. But it started me on this journey of recognizing that for so long of my life, I had lived my life for others and by labels. So I work at a large technology company. I was an employee. Then I was a wife. Then I was someone who struggled with infertility. Then I eventually became a mom. And you know, at that point, at that 6:03 moment, I was a mom of a 3-year-old and no, she wasn't even 3 yet. She was a little over 2 and a 9-month-old. And so I was just going through the motions.
Yeah.
And it started me on this journey of, frankly, like rediscovering who I was. Who was Jessie? Mm. I had forgotten who I was at my core.
Yeah.
And in order to rediscover and continue to rediscover who I am, I had to deal with a lot of shit that I went through in my life.
Yeah.
And one of those things was sort of my journey to motherhood, which for us was not easy. It involved medical intervention. We ultimately went the route of IVF. And my oldest daughter, Lucy, is actually a twin. And we lost her son, her brother, my son, Clark, in our second trimester. And I never dealt with it. I never went through the process of dealing with it. In fact, like we went through everything and I was on a plane 72 hours later for work. Wow. And it was, that's how deep it was, that I built up walls and I didn't deal with my emotions.
Yeah.
Like I was a really and still am. Like, this is something I actively, you know, have to work against. I'm really good at compartmentalizing. I'm really good at putting up walls.
Yeah.
And it was in dealing with all of this that I started to share my story.
Yeah.
And I, you know, at first I shared it with close friends. Yeah. Then I would share it with, you know, friends of friends. Yeah. And what was crazy to me at the time was, as I was sharing my story, people were telling me too. And it wasn't that they had also gone through an infertility journey. You know, some of these people weren't even parents, but they could connect to that feeling of isolation or feeling like they were alone.
Yeah.
And that was my aha, was I believe that we've all had moments, and I've had many of them, where you felt alone or isolated. And there's not enough safe spaces for people to feel like they can share. And there's lots of reasons why people don't feel like they can share. And so when I finally found sort of community and felt like I could share my story in a safe place, it was amazing. Like, I felt alive for the first time in a long time. Right. And so the podcast is my way of paying it forward and creating that space and creating that connection and community for others.
Yeah. First of all, I want to say thank you for sharing that. I know that, you know, both of us as sort of like public personas, I'll say, we oftentimes recount our stories, and sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not necessarily easy to do that. So thank you, for doing that. I think I want to start to unpack this a little bit. You mentioned that you are really good at sort of compartmentalizing things. And I'm curious for you where do you think that comes from? Because my thoughts is that it comes from experiences in life, because I had sort of learned that behavior based off of experience in life. So where do you think that comes from for you?
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time in therapy talking about this. you know, it's funny because my therapist actually asked me, she's like, do you think there's like one incident? And I was like, I'm sure there is, but yeah. I think that there's, you know, you mentioned that my family's Italian. I come from this really big extended family. And as I've like gotten older and as I've looked at like my kids, what I've realized is I come from a very loving family. Like a family that actually knows too much about everyone else's like shit. Like, it's like, they're very loving, very involved, but we also don't talk about hard things. We never have. And so it was never modeled for me.
Yeah.
You know, I can count on one hand the amount of times I've seen my dad and my mom cry. And I've had a conversation with my mom. I actually point blank was like, you know, I just had this conversation with my therapist, and I said, like, she was asking me all these questions about our family history, and I was like, I couldn't answer her. I don't know. And she sort of like paused. And, you know, I could tell I offended her a little bit, which was not my intention. And then she sort of like moved on to another topic and then came back, and she's like, you know, I was thinking more about what you said. And, you know, mama and papa, which is what we called my grandparents, they never told us things either. And so I just think it's this cycle. Like, both my grandparents lived through the Depression. They both came over. They immigrated from Italy. I know their families went through hard things, but yet they never talked about it. And, you know, it was funny. My mom said in this conversation that she also grew up close to her cousins, and that my second cousin, but we call them my aunt, would tell stories about, like, you know, stories her parents told, but like, she was like, I don't have that. We didn't talk about it. And so I think for me, it's something that it was just never modeled, and it's so deep. it goes so many generations, that when I look at my two little humans, you know, I often say they're my mirror. Like, I want them to feel their emotions. Mm-hmm. I want them to have the crazy tempered tantrums. Yeah. I want them to know emotions are okay. And again, it's not like I ever had a conversation with my parents that they were like, don't cry or don't have emotions, but it was never modeled for me.
Right.
And as the oldest of two younger siblings, I think my role in our family, like we often joked, I was the glue that held everything together.
Yeah.
I learned really early that if I could just sort of like push through and not break down or not have like large swings one or the other, I did well. And I was successful, quote unquote, like successful from like a cultural standpoint.
Right, right, right. I think what's incredibly fascinating about what you are saying is I think that, and this is partially why I really love having these kinds of conversations, because I think I start to think a lot about human behavior a lot. And I start to think about how human behavior hasn't necessarily changed all that much over the past however many years. And what's really key about what you're saying is that there's this pattern from your grandparents to your parents, to you in a certain degree, that when we have a lot of stuff going on in life, we don't focus on our emotions. We focus on getting through it, and we focus on doing what we have to do to be able to survive. And there's this almost like animalistic sort of thing about that where, you know, I think about my puppy, right? And I think about how when my puppy, he's still a little nervous on walks and he's still a little nervous outside, especially with all the car noises. But if like he's nervous and like a dog approaches him too quickly, he stands up and starts to get like a little like, try to be a little brave in the moment. And there's something about that that like mirrors us in the sense that even though we're like scared shitless, that we sort of like try to just like be brave for the moment to try to push through it and try to get through it. And that's not necessarily the healthiest behavior. And we might find success, and finding the success, I think, is what reinforces that behavior in sort of the pushing through. But when we're talking about long-term, right, it's not necessarily going to be the best, right? If I don't help my puppy understand that he has to work through his anxieties, he's going to grow up and be either anxious or angry, and I don't necessarily want that for him. And same thing for us, right? Like, we don't necessarily want to deal with the long-term effects of us shoving everything down for so long. So that, I think, is incredibly important to point out. I also want to say that there's this funny thing about just the similarities between folks from different places across the world, right? You were mentioning about your grandparents, and you know, you're from this Italian family. And I was thinking about my mom the whole time that you were talking about this, and I was like, oh, that's my mom. Like, she worked through it. She, you know, grew up poor in the Dominican Republic, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, this is the same thing, right? And and this is, we're dealing with it the same way. I'm curious to your thoughts, if you've gotten any of that from the conversations that you've had with people so far.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when I think about sort of the common threads, and that's the point, right? It's like, even though each of our experiences are vastly our own, right? That's really important to acknowledge. Like, your experiences are your experiences. My experiences are my experiences. Right. But there's always some form of a common thread. And that's the key, because I want my kids to grow up in a world where, listen, like, I don't think the polarization of people's opinions are going away anytime soon. No. But I would love for them to be able to have a conversation with somebody whose viewpoints may not be their own, and them to be able to hold that space and hear that person out, whether they agree with it or not, because that's empathy. Like, that's where, to me, when you're able to take off your mask for a second and it invites the other person to take off their mask, that's connection. That's like true, authentic connection. And that, I believe, in turn breeds empathy. And like, we could all use a little bit more empathy in the world. But to go back to your question around sort of, you know, I think the common theme in many of the conversations I have is the ability to turn inwards, the ability to come back to yourself. Mm. And I go back to my own story of, I had lost that for so long.
Right.
You know, I'm turning 36 in December. And so I started this journey for myself, about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, right? And so I'm still very early in this process. And, but I went many years on that version of my life, right? Of those really, really tall, thick walls. And so I think, you know, when I think about what I can pass down to my kids, the generational patterns that I can break, sort of what I've been hearing in the stories that, people tell me on my platform, it has to do with that. It has to do with this desire or this notion of recognizing the ability to look inwards.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether you make a change off of that or not,
right, right.
You know, everyone's on their own journey for that, but it's that ability to recognize like, okay, I want something different and I'm going to fight for it.
Hmm. That makes me think, have you sort of gaining this sort of knowledge of looking inward? Have you had conversations with folks who, either in your personal life or on your podcast, who struggle looking inwards, right? And asking them to look inward in their life and in their truth.
Yeah. I mean, I can think of lots of personal conversations about this. And I think it comes back to, right, you can't force somebody to want to speak their truth. You can't force somebody to want to look inwards. They have to want it for themselves. And I specifically am thinking about my husband, and right, like he has seen my evolution. Mm-hmm. And you know, there have been times when I just want to like shake him and be like, just do this. Like your life is going to be amazing, but like, it can't be like that.
Right.
And so I think it comes down to modeling, and you know, that's what I try to do for my kids. And, you know, there's ups and downs. There are weeks where I will go by and I realize I haven't been looking inwards, and I'll like pause and be like, why am I so frustrated or angry or like resentful? And it's like, oh, well, I haven't been doing the things that I need, like, you know, getting up early to meditate for even just 5 minutes, like getting some form of exercise, whether that's just taking a freaking walk by myself. And also just taking that time to ask myself in the morning, like, how do you want to feel today?
Yeah.
Like those three simple things, sometimes I don't do it. And when I don't do it, the wheels fall off my bus. And so, you know, I think it comes back to, you know, when I'm having conversations with people, you know, not to necessarily bring this back to racial injustice, but, you know, it's the same concept. You can't force someone to have a conversation that they're not ready to have, or they're not ready to hear the viewpoint, right? Like you have to meet people where they are and create that space, which sucks. Cause like, sometimes I just want to be like, you know, like I acknowledge as like a white cisgender female, I hold a lot of privilege. And so I just want to be like, how do you not understand the privilege you hold? But like, people don't get it. And that's unfortunate, but I have to imagine that, over time and with modeling and with like creating spaces for them to feel like they are seen and heard, they will ultimately be more open to hearing other people's perspectives because, you know, that is what matters, right? Like when you're able to put yourself in someone else's shoes, that allows you to open up and say like, okay, well, what am I missing?
Yeah. And I think what's really funny, I'm thinking about Facebook conversations right now and like,
oh gosh.
and I say conversations, but it's really like Facebook arguments and people having them. I actually made a conscious decision maybe like 2-3 months ago. I was like, I'm no longer going to post about politics. You know, I'll say who I'm supporting in the upcoming election. I'll say, you know, this is what I believe in, but I'm not going to argue about it on Facebook because that's not the medium for it, right? You lose tonality, you lose intent, you lose that realness, and you know, people will yell fake news all they want. But you know, I think there's a lot to say for, I think, a person being ready to have that conversation as well. I usually try to sneak in a mention of my girlfriend on these things. And one of the things that happens, because my girlfriend's pretty introverted, and I'm probably the person that she shares the most with, and I'm honored and feel the great privilege of that. Hi, Jess, if you're listening.
I like her name.
And, you know, sometimes I realize that she's not always ready to share something. And me, as a talkative, open book, I have to acknowledge the fact that she's not always ready to discuss certain things, or maybe she's a little upset with me over something I did, or she's still processing on her own, and she's sometimes dealing with things on her own and working through it on her own. And there's a great deal of patience that has to come with that from both people's end, right? Because I think as partners, we want the best for our significant other. But at the same time, we want to make sure that, you know, we're respectful of their boundaries in that moment. And I think that is also key and important. Now, you've mentioned therapy a couple times. Mm-hmm. How did you come to therapy?
Yeah. So I first started with therapy when I started going through my infertility journey. And again, when I was going through that journey, so I'm someone who, likes to control things, I guess. And I would say I'm a recovering perfectionist. So, you know, for me, just a general like inability to be able to become pregnant in quote unquote the way that I was supposed to was hard for me. But then I, you know, we did IUI and it didn't work. And then we went down the path of IVF and I kept having canceled cycles. And like, again, the up and down of like, right, was just really hard for me. And I realized that I needed to talk to somebody. Right. And so I went to a therapist then. And then I actually stopped when I became pregnant. Mm. And then when we realized something was wrong with my pregnancy and that we were likely going to lose our son and then ultimately lost him, I went back for a little bit. Yeah. But then I stopped again. And I didn't go back for probably, let's see, my girls are 23 months apart. So almost 3 years. Wow. And it was at that point, at that 6:03 moment, I started to recognize that something had to change. I found a coach, but I also found a therapist again. Mm. And it, for me, it's just this, again, the ability to have a different perspective, to see things in a different way. And I think the benefits of both coaches and also therapists is the questions that they ask in the way that they help you see things in different light. Mm. I'm a huge proponent of therapy.
How have you been doing, like, virtual therapy right now?
Yes. Yes.
How have you found that versus, you know, being in a room with someone?
So I'll say this. I work in a technology company and the team that I lead is across several offices. So I'm very used to being in a virtual world. Yeah. When the pandemic hit, this was like no difference for me. Yeah. outside of the fact that I'm staring at my laptop screen versus like a larger screen in my office. So for me, I don't find it hard to create connection over a virtual world, but I know for many others, it's new and it's hard. And my husband and I actually started couples therapy literally the week that Chicago shut down. And that was hard for him and I. It was like couples therapy was new for us. And so, you know, I will say sometimes it takes longer to build, you know, that rapport and that relationship because you're, it's a different dimension, right?
It's interesting. So one of my mentors from college, my old professor, shout out to Josh Hammonds, if you're listening. And he actually talks a lot about like the biology of human communication. He's a communications professor nut. And he often talks about how there's this chemical reaction that happens when we're having conversations with another person physically that we don't necessarily get from Zoom. And it's actually why we get sort of the Zoom fatigue, where you don't necessarily get the bump in energy from the actual human connection, which is why a lot of us are kind of walking around like sleepy zombies all the time, because we're just talking to our computers. So there is something to say about the physical conversation, but I think you're right in the fact that right now, there is also a lot of great opportunity to have real conversations, right? Like, I don't think we would have ever have had the racial conversation in my workplace in person. And maybe, but I think we still got some pretty deep connections out of that virtually. And I think that that's sort of the important thing, is trying your hardest and your best to make the best of the medium and make the best of sort of what you have. And as you've mentioned already a couple times, control what you can and control what is well within reach. You mentioned this a little bit earlier about your wanting to teach your children about feeling their emotions and feeling sort of their own feelings. And I think one, me, it's not a dad, but trying to think about wanting to educate someone in that perspective, how is it that you are approaching that, especially right now that they're a little younger?
Yeah. So I think it goes back to modeling and letting them see me cry, letting them see me get upset, letting them know it's okay.
Yeah.
To have those emotions, and you know, you'll work through them. They don't last for forever.
Right.
And it's a learning process for me, right? Like, I feel like I'm learning along with them, because this is like, again, I spent 34 years of my life, like not doing this. And so I'm maybe like a slight step ahead of them, but in some ways they're ahead of me. And what I will say, you know, there's so many things in life right now, especially in a world where everyone feels like they can have an opinion and say that opinion, that feel polarizing.
Yeah.
And parenting for me is one of them. I feel this constant, I feel like I'm constantly battling judgment. And I've often joked that like my journey with infertility gave me a thick skin, and allowed me, because it was mind boggling to me the amount of opinions people had about, you know, my own journey and my body, and it was just like a whole other conversation. But and so for me, I've had to come to a place where I'm okay that I'm parenting my kids different than like culturally acceptable. I've had to become okay with being in situations with other parents and them, you know, giving me the side eye or being like, aren't you going to force your kid to say I'm sorry? And I was like, and for me, this is probably also the thing of being a girl mom. it is so frustrating to me when my four-year-old apologizes for everything, which is definitely something she's picking up from like culture and school and society. Yeah. Versus our philosophy as a family is you need to apologize if you've intentionally hurt somebody, whether it's like physically or emotionally. And you have to mean it. Like you can't use "I'm sorry." And I would much rather her ask the question, "How can I make it better?" and take accountability and like hold herself accountable to the action she did versus say, "I'm sorry." And it's been like fascinating to observe like that in parenting situations, because people are like, "My kid doesn't know how to answer that question." I was like, "That's not my problem. That's like my problem is making sure that my child is holding herself accountable to the actions that she took, that she is learning to look inwards." Like, for example, I have her do this thing. She has some sensory processing stuff.
Yeah.
So I have her do this thing when her needs, her sensory needs are heightening, and just close your eyes and ask, you know, herself like what she needs. And so she like scrunches her face and she says out loud, "Body, what do you need?"
That's so cute.
And like the first time I had her do this, I was like, "What is going to come out of this kid's?" And it was like adorable, right? I was like, "What is going to come out of her mouth?" And she said, "Oh, what'd she say the first time?" She said, "Friends." And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." Hmm. And then it's like, sometimes she'll say a hug, or sometimes she'll say like a nap, like, you know. And it's just, again, it's about trying to teach them the skills and the tools that I didn't have until I was much later in life.
Yeah.
And I'm going to F it up. Like, and it's the same thing that I've realized just generally in life, right? Like when I have to have hard conversations about race or about inequities or about, you know, I don't like to talk about politics, but sometimes I get like forced into these conversations, right? And what I've realized is it's more about showing up than getting it right.
Yeah, I think that's really fantastic. One, again, not a dad, but it sounds like you're approaching this pretty soundly, right? Like, and you're approaching it in the way that works for you, and you're approaching it in the way that you think will lead to better long-term behavior from your kids. And I think that that's what's important. I think that what often happens with a lot of things, I think parenting is one of those things. On my end, you know, weight loss is one of those things where people all of a sudden just like have a million opinions. And sometimes like very unqualified people have like very strong opinions. And there's a lot of things in life about that. But I think that that is really interesting, and kind of like trying to block that out while at the same time trying to do what you think is best is incredibly admirable. But it sounds like it's getting the results that you want. And I think that that's sort of the key takeaway from that. It's that you're doing the thing and it's leading to result, and you're learning along the way, right? Like you're learning some things work better than others, but you're still walking away from the experience a little bit stronger every time.
Yeah, I think that's it, right? It goes into relationships. Like I want to have a relationship with my kid. Mm. And I think in typical modern parenting, right, it's still this idea of like, I'm the parent, you're the child, I will control you.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to like have a relationship. I want them to feel like they have this space to express who they are, that they have this space to like work through their shit that they don't understand. I am for sure, like they are going to need therapy. Like I'm screwing something up, I'm sure, in many ways.
Yeah.
But I think that's the point, right? Is like, we're all our own unique beings. This notion of like everything has to be done the same way, that we all have to sort of be these robots. Like, that needs to be broken. That stigma, that cultural belief, like, needs to be shattered, because we're all our own unique beings. And like, same thing with education, right? Like, I come from a family of educators, and I think, like, shout out to educators, like, you all are amazing humans, and you deserve so much more than you're getting right now. But you think about the educational system, and it's like this one size fits all. Like, we all learn vastly differently, right? And so being able to shatter some of that notion around it's my way or the highway, or it's this way or it's not, to me is really important, because again, it creates that space for people to feel like they can take off their mask, that they can be themselves. They can authentically show up for who they are in that moment, and it'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there is this great analogy coming out of, maybe not an analogy, but, lesson from what you had just said about wanting to fit sort of a one-size-fits-all solution for things, which is, you know, part of what I try to talk a lot about here, and that sort of notion not necessarily existing. And I think the schooling thing is a great example of that, where I did horribly on my SATs. In high school, my grades were, I don't know, maybe like a 70 average out of 100. So not great. But I've worked alongside Ivy League kids now in a professional setting, and in some capacities, I have performed better. And that's not necessarily like a showing off thing. It's our measuring standards for success in every aspect of life, not just education, needs to be a little bit more individualized. And it's hard when you're trying to, you know, create an education system, as an example, when you're trying to create a weight loss system, when you're trying to create parenting systems. It's hard to not create these one-size-fits-all things, but it's also important to recognize that that message and that methodology is going to work with some folks and with some people, but it's not going to work with everyone. And I think that that's sort of the most important thing. The last thing I'll ask you before I let you go is, you know, you're working through all these things all the time. You are learning parenting all along the way. What is the thing that drives you and pushes you to keep going now that you're aiming for? Like, what's, and I hate framing it this way, but like, what is Jesse like, you know, 5-10 years from now?
That's a good question. I hope that Jesse 5-10 years from now is still growing, is still thinking with a growth mindset. I hate, like, these are all buzzwords, so apologies. But like, what I mean by that is I'm still curious. I'm still learning to connect with myself. And I've created a life that feels aligned to how I want to feel. And that is like my ultimate goal, right? Is to be able to say, how do I want to feel? And how do I then create my day, have the energy flow in a way that aligns to that? And some days I get it right, and some days I get it vastly wrong. And all of those are learning opportunities. Mm. And so for me, my goal, I've realized over time, like, my purpose, I believe, is to help people find their voice and then amplify their voice. Mm. And I am excited to see what unfolds for, you know, that could take lots of different paths, but I think, you know, in 10 years, I would love to be able to look back and recognize that my story has impacted just one person. Mm. And my framework that I created to help people sort of frame and speak their truths has helped one person. And like, that's it. That's what it's about, because those individuals, it's a snowball effect. Like, if they can then pass, you know, that along to one other person, they enter a conversation and they're able to take off their mask and share a story with somebody. And then that in turn allows someone, that person to share, right? Like then right. you become a society, a culture that is one step closer to being a little bit more accepting, one step closer to being a little bit more empathetic, one step closer to being willing to like understand different viewpoints. Mm-hmm. And that is the world that I want to live yeah. in and I want my kids to live in.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure you know this already, being a mom. But I think your story is already impacting your little ones, right? And the way, and I know you meant this a little bit differently, but
oh, it's true though. It's 100% true.
Yeah, like your kids are you know, both the good and the not so good are gonna take away a lot from you and your experiences, and especially as they start to get a little older and you share more things with them. That they're going to take those lessons and they'll be like, wow, like, you know, mom dealt with, you know, X, Y, Z, A, B, C. Here's how I might deal with something in life. But I think same thing with your podcast and your platform, and that, you know, whatever form and this takes for you, I think that you have a lot of like pretty real conversations, and that is important, especially in 2020 when we like crave real yeah. and we yes. need more real, because yeah. in a virtual world we sometimes don't know what's real, and that's sort of important and key. Well, Jesse, this has been absolutely great. Where can the people of the internet find you and hear more from you?
The people of the internet. I like that. I'm going to steal that. Still with Fred. People can find me on my podcast, This Is My Truth, which is available on all major podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, also Anchor, you know, anywhere you listen to a podcast. You can also reach me on Instagram at This Is My Truth Podcast, or you can check out my website at www.jessi.com. That's J-E-S-S-I, Sherlef, it's a doozy of the last name, S-H-U-R-A-L-E-F-F.com.
Awesome. I will make sure to link to those in the description of the podcast as well. But thank you, Jesse. This is fantastic. You know, we record these sessions pretty early, both when I went on your show and this one. So I always feel like the last time we had a conversation and this time I'm like, oh man, I am so ready to tackle the day just because we had this very like therapeutic session. So thank you once again. And you're always welcome to come back.
Thank you, Rich. I feel the same way. And it's funny, my husband last night asked me, he's like, where do you, like, what excites you? And I was like, I get energy from talking to people and being real. And so I feel the same way. Like, I feel like I can totally tackle today. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. All right. Well, that does it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Go follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Rich Sabata. You can also follow the brand Bodega Body at Bodega Body on both Twitter and Instagram. And I'll see you again next week. Hey, yo, Icon, what
you got? I'm back in rare form, nigga. I said I'm back in rare form, nigga. Yo, listen, I said I came from the bottom. You an elevator, baby. The struggle made us humble and genuinely crazy. A silver spoon, never. I was raised in the living room. All day smoking haze, praying that I get it soon. I took a nigga pack when I was broke. Almost 20 with no money, up in college lacking hope. Had the whole dorm clicking, you know niggas gotta smoke. Wiping out the competition, ain't no David had the dope. Couldn't walk in my butters, they only fit G's. Nigga, my wrist freeze. Niggas play Superman and get Chris Reeve. All from a text message. I have your girl on you. You be stretched out before you send your next message. I don't like niggas. Beat around the bush for what? I'm really nice, nigga. Ask around and look them up. I'm in a deli with a bottle trying to see what's goody. Yeti side streets cold. You gon' need your
okay, money. None of y'all niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nice, say lied. Must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga. I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby. I don't need a bride. Said all my niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nice, say lied. must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride.
I feel like a precious pebble lodged under the sea. Since I was 8, I knew a 9 to 5 wasn't for me. Shit ain't always how you want it to be. That's why I gotta work hard. My ancestors had to run to be free. At 15, I was running the streets, drinking liquor, puffing the guits, cutting from school, fucking with freaks. By 21, I was sunk in the seat. G-Ride, bumping some beats, probably looking for something to eat. During my childhood, nothing was sweet. I wore ponies to school. The mother niggas had ups on their feet. It never fazed me though. I knew I was more intelligent, and the gift I had made it even more relevant. When I rap, I touch many like a known therapist, cause I'm packed with more passion than a gold medalist. I say something, they gon' jack it, nigga, no letterman. I can pop at any time, shit, there's no telling it.
Okay, none of y'all niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nicely lied, must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride. I said all my niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nicely lied, must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride.